Edward J. Roach is a historian at the Dayton Aviation Heritage National Historic Park in Dayton. He's written a very interesting book about the Wright brothers and their early days of establishing the Wright Company in Dayton. He tells the story of the brothers who were engineers and inventors lacking in the business savvy to set up a large company. The book has just been published by Ohio University Press. It's called The Wright Company, From Invention to Industry. Ed Roach, welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself first. What is your background as an historian and as an author?
Well, I've been working for the National Park Service for about 13 years later this year, first at Prince William Forest Park in Northern Virginia, and then for about the last 10 years in Dayton at Dayton Aviation. Before that, I'd taught English with the Peace Corps in Ukraine and actually grew up mostly in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, which is kind of famous for a few things connected with the Civil War and with Abraham Lincoln and with also with Dwight Eisenhower.
So history has been a part of your life from the very beginning.
We lived in Yorktown, Virginia before that. So, yeah.
Oh, gosh. You have written a very interesting book here. I've read it, and I know I live in Dayton, so I know a lot about the Wright brothers and their history from aviation. But you have brought a side to their story that most of us just don't know about. And wonder, how did you come to this?
In 2009, Congress added the Wright Company factory buildings to the boundary of the national park. It doesn't mean that the park owns them, but they're now within the boundary and the park can acquire them.
And you have some of those photos of those buildings in the book.
Mm-hmm. And many others from Wright State University, where I got a lot of the photos. But we hadn't done much research on that part of the Wright brothers' story before. There had been a little research done in the 1980s, but it hadn't been followed through. So I got started on a project to give the park rangers who work for us a better idea of what that part of the story was. And it just grew and grew and kept growing. And about four and a half years later, the book came out.
Well, you have an amazing amount of research that this is the product of. Where were your sources for the research?
All over the place. The best collection of Wright Company papers that still exists is at the Museum of Flight in Seattle. The diary of Frank Russell, the first general manager of the Wright Company, is at the University of Wyoming. There are some Wright Company papers at the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. Wright State University in Dayton has some other papers. I pulled some things from, I think a few things from Columbia University, from a few other places, too. It's a group of records that's really spread around.
Well, they were notorious for their secrecy and for guarding their invention and for not letting people know about it. And much of what I've read about them indicates they just didn't leave a whole lot of stuff to refer to.
Well, and they may not have. One of the problems with the Wright Company is that the papers that exist today, especially the ones that are in Seattle now, were basically recovered from a dumpster. So what exists in the records today is really, frankly, very difficult to work with because it's very heavy on the first years of the Wright Company, not very heavy on the last years. And the brothers weren't particularly good record keepers. Especially after the first general manager who had a business background, after he leaves, the quality of record keeping goes down. And then the company also had its main headquarters office in New York City. So the records that are in Seattle, which are essentially onion skin copies, the photocopies of the day, are they from New York? Are they from Dayton? I don't know. So there's probably other stuff somewhere, maybe, but...
Well, you have certainly made a valiant effort with this book. You have a wonderful set of notes at the end, further explaining so much of what's happening, and a bibliography that further researchers are going to be able to take your information and go. Mm-hmm. Are you working on anything else along the same line?
Not along the same lines with the Wright Company right now. I'm doing some more work on Paul Ernst Dunbar, who's another one of the principal characters of the park, and also on Charles Young. There's a new national park in between Xenia and Wilberforce that was just established last March to Charles Young.
Where is your office? Are you at the Carillon Park?
Or? No, I'm at the near where the Wright Brothers bicycle shop is in West State.
Yes, West 3rd.
In the Hoover block there.
Yes, that's wonderful. That whole area is wonderful. And if people have not visited that, they should. And you have brought to light this aspect of their really lack of business acumen, that they were not able to follow through on their discoveries and their inventions vis-a-vis the original flight, the airplane getting it all started, and Glenn Curtiss, with whom, of course, they had already been vying to be the first, he was really much more of the businessman, and he took over and ran with it. And the Wright brothers, as you mentioned earlier, sort of fell by the wayside.
The Wright brothers are great engineers, great inventors. They're not particularly good businessmen. And that's not necessarily unusual. If you're in Dayton, think about the cash register. It's the Pattersons who are famous for really bringing the cash register to the world, not James Ready, who was the inventor. And in the same way, the Wrights certainly invent the airplane, and they do a lot in the first decade of the airplane to get it out into the public. But they're not very good businessmen. They've only run small businesses before. They've run their printing business, which was basically between the two of them. They've run their bicycle business, which was them and Charlie Taylor, their mechanic, and maybe another person or two here or there. To run a capitalized business where you have titans of New York investing, men who had extensive experience on other companies, big capitalists, especially in transportation. Many were involved in the development of the New York subway system. They had different expectations for business, and Wilbur and Orville just weren't part of that culture.
Well, they had never worked for anyone but themselves. They really didn't have any other employees, except, as you mentioned, Charlie Taylor. It's some really minor thing. So they just didn't know how to deal in that world. And your book really gives wonderful detail of all of that and how they not only were not good businessmen themselves, they prevented the people who could have helped them to build a stronger business.
Yeah, they weren't the best people to work for, which, and it's kind of odd, too, because they really developed a poor working relationship with Frank Russell, who was the first company general manager.
Who could have helped them a lot.
He came in 1910. He'd been the president of a zipper manufacturer in Hoboken, New Jersey, which wasn't doing that well. He was looking for a new opportunity. His uncle was one of the company directors. So there's a bit of nepotism involved in getting him into the general manager position. Comes to Dayton and has ideas of how to run a business. Has been told beforehand that by the Wrights, oh, we're going to retire. We're going to let you run the business. We're going to be executives, but we really don't plan to get in your way. But the brothers have such a feeling of ownership over their invention that they find that they just can't do that.
They didn't let him do what they asked him to do.
They didn't. And there are some issues with Russell not necessarily being diplomatic at certain times as well. It's a two-way street. So he only lasts in Dayton about a year and a half before he resigns and goes to work for one of the Wright's competitors in Massachusetts, Burgess Company. What's kind of interesting, though, is that after he's shipped his furniture to Massachusetts, where does he lodge? He lodges with Wilbur and Orville at 7 Hawthorne Street.
Well, at least they maintained a good relationship. There was still that part of it. There wasn't animosity.
And he comes back the next year for Wilbur's funeral after Wilbur dies of typhoid fever in 1912.
There is so much to be gained from this book. You have wonderful sections in here where you describe what happens, and then you go a little bit later into the book in terms and explain more of the business aspect of it, and you close it off. There's a good bit of history of Dayton in here. You also not only give the history of the Wright Company, but you give a good bit of the success of Glenn Curtis and the Burgess Company and others who were doing the same thing. So there is an awful lot to be gained from this book. So, Ed, tell us where all the book is available.
Oh, you can buy it in hard copy in some bookstores. I know we have it at the park if you're in Dayton. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. It's on the Ohio University Press website.
Well, it's a wonderful book. And within the book, you have some great photographs. I had not seen, I don't think, any of the photographs in here. Plus, you have print versions of their advertising. They were trying to build a business, and you tell so much good information about how it just didn't work and the reasons why it didn't work. So kudos to you for having written this book and gotten all this started. And thank you, Edward J. Roche, for being with us today. We've been talking about the Wright Company, from invention to industry, the illustrated history of the Wright brothers, and the business side of their work, written by our guest, Edward J. Roche. Ed, thanks again for stopping by tonight.
You're welcome.
And you'll find a link to the book at wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Lloyd Bryant.